Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
A local author has a new book, and the proceeds are going to a great cause. Let's go in depth with Carol Van Klompenberg, author of Tending Beauty, 40 Moments in My Gardens. Carol, you have a new book out.
That's right, Bob. I do. It's called Tending Beauty, 40 Moments in My Gardens.
And you're a big gardener.
Oh, boy. Yes. Two of my passions in life are flower gardening and words. And when I started writing about gardening, I was able to combine both of those passions. So I get to play in my gardens, and then I get to play with words.
Well, I've been in your garden, and it is just beautiful, very tranquil, beautiful flowers, shrubbery, different garden elements. What drives you to do it?
The gardening?
Yeah.
Well, a garden is, that's a good question, because a garden is a lot of things. And one time, about 10 years ago, I asked some of my gardening friends, why do you garden? And they talked about exercise, they talked about meditation, they talked about relaxation, they talked about prayer, they talked about beauty and aesthetics, and I nodded at each time they answered that way, and kept thinking, there's something more. And then I thought, what is that more? And I made my own list, and it had a lot of those things. And then I realized that to really communicate what gardening is for me would take a book, because I wanted to take readers by the hand and walk them through the process of gardening and what happens in my inner and outer worlds when I garden. So Tending Beauty really is taking the reader for a walk through the experience of gardening and all the many faces that has.
Well, I've told you before that I think that you're one of the area's finest writers.
You're very kind.
It's always wonderful to read your work. It's very moving. You always take us some very interesting directions, and I can't anticipate it, which is part of the fun of your mm-hmm. writing.
Well, the interesting thing for me is I can't always anticipate where it's going to go either. In fact, I think that sometimes the pieces of writing that I like best are the pieces during which I make a discovery during the time that I'm writing. I think I'm headed one place, and I end up somewhere different. And I've learned something and come to a new place in the very process of writing. So sometimes it surprises me too, Bob.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's like without the writing, you may not have ever gotten there just by thinking.
Exactly. Some writers say, I don't know what I think until I've processed it by writing. You know, I really don't know what my opinion is on something until I've followed that trail of words to a conclusion. And that's not always the case. Sometimes I think I'm headed somewhere and I end up there. But I always need to be open to a surprise. And it's like that with gardening, too. You know, you can try a plant in one place and it doesn't do well, and by George, it does better in a place with more sun. So there's a parallel process for the writing process and the gardening process. It's always experimenting and finding what works, what doesn't, and ending up surprised.
Well, and there's a certain pattern to it, too, in the sense that we can be so easily distracted by a random thought or something mm-hmm. where the words will anchor us and get us back, and we will build upon it. And in the same way, a garden is sort of like that. You start at a point, and then you grow from that point. And it's not necessarily linear, but it's this sort of organic thing that is, you know, has parallel, aspects with respect to its creativity.
Yes. And I think of it sometimes as listening to the garden. You know, what does this plant want? And so there's this sense of listening to what my garden has to tell me. So when I go out in my garden on a morning to do something, I'm not always 100% sure what part of the garden I'm going to work on. And then something calls to me, and then something else calls to me, and the garden tells me what it needs. That sounds terribly mystical, and the engineers among us might be scratching their heads at this point, but that truly is the experience, I think, much of the time. Now, right now, I'm getting ready for the garden tour at the end of the month, and I can't always listen to my garden. I have a deadline, and so it's not always that listen to my garden and what does the garden tell me. Sometimes there are deadlines and things to be done, too, but I like it best when I listen to what my garden tells me.
We're going to return to listen to your garden, but first, while you touched on the tour, briefly tell us what the tour is.
Okay. June 29, June 30, and July 1, there's a Gateway to Hope Gardens tour that has four Pella Gardens and a Pella Victorian Villa. It's a charitable tour to benefit Friends of Chinandega, and we're also using it as the time when the book is launched. So available at my garden, which is on the tour, will be for the first time Tending Beauty, and all royalties for purchases during the tour will be donated to Friends of Chinandega.
Okay, and they can go to kniacarols.com and find more about the event or your Facebook page.
Yes, that's correct. Facebook page is www.friendsofchinandega.wordpress.com. It's easier to go to KNIAKRLS because Chinandega is not always easy to spell. I recommend going to KNIAKRLS.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation with Carol Van Klompenberg, author of Tending Beauty, 40 Moments in My Gardens. Listening to your garden, I presume your plants don't use words. They communicate in some other way, right?
You're right. You're right. But it does feel as if something calls out to me. So I walk out, and there are potted geraniums, and they call themselves to my attention that they need deadheading, you know? Or a spirea bush is sprawling over top of the geraniums. And I feel as if I'm responding to it when I say, oh, I need to cut back that spirea bush to give the geraniums more room to breathe, which is exactly what I need to do in my garden right now. The spirea bushes have been calling to me. But it's a matter, I think, of being in tune with what's happening outside of myself, rather than so absorbed in what's happening inside of myself. And so it's a matter of being observant and aware and then responding. And that happens, that's a good position in all of life, but for some reason it's easier for me in a garden than it is sitting at a workstation in front of a computer.
Is it a learning experience too?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I know much more about flowers and plants now than I did 20 years ago, 25 years ago when I started. But an interesting thing for me is people have suggested that I become a master gardener, and I have never done that. And I think, although master gardening is a wonderful thing to do, I think something in me wants to stay a student and wants to stay a beginner. In fact, I have a piece about that in the book, that I don't want to become an expert and be obligated to do it right. I want to retain the freedom to play in my garden, the freedom to be a beginner, the freedom to make mistakes and try again. And I think the day I see myself as an expert, it will become a lot less fun.
Is there a competitive side of this too? I mean, do gardeners think, oh, I want my garden to be better than so-and-so's, or is that any part of it too?
Not for me. Not for me. When I meet with, I'm a fairly competitive person, and people who've played cards with me will tell you that. But when I go to someone else's garden, for the most part, I enjoy the beauty along with them. There's more of a collaborative, enjoying the garden together sense for me. I don't feel a strong sense of competition when I go to visit other gardens. I just go, wow, that's beautiful.
So when somebody's coming over, do you get nervous? So I've got so much work in my garden, I've got to do it before they come over?
Am I nervous about the tour? Yes.
Yeah.
There's pressure. Because a garden is a moving picture. A garden is always in motion. But when there's a tour and it's just at a certain time, it's like taking a still picture. It's like taking a snapshot. So, yes, then for the tour, there's pressure because you want everything to be good at that moment during that weekend. So, yes, there's pressure to have everything in order in time for the garden tour. But other than that, when people come to see it, no. Because it's beauty in motion, and it is what it is at that moment.
Always in motion. That's an interesting way to put it, which means if it's always in motion, perhaps it's a little faster than you, and it's impossible to keep up with.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes, yes.
Wow. And so I see you out in the garden, and I see weeding or deadheading or whatever, and then I see you slipping inside and writing a little snippet of a note down and then coming back out. Is that how you did it?
Sometimes, but sometimes I have my smartphone with me and I don't want to lose a thought, so I will dictate it on my smartphone while I'm in the garden and then put my phone back in my little fanny pack and go on. Because if I want to keep something and I don't want to lose it and I'm afraid it's fleeting, sometimes I will actually dictate the sense of it before I go back in. But many times, yes, I do go back in and sit down and write.
Be a capture. You have that, something happens, you have that wondrous, beautiful, whatever, you know, maybe even sorrowful thought.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And you've got to capture it because they're fleeting.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And especially since, to quote a phrase I heard you use recently, as the years go by, my brain gets a bit more leaky. And with a leaky brain, it's much better if I just quickly dictate it and then I know I haven't lost it.
You know, I invented that phrase.
I'm sure you did.
you're free to use it.
Though. Thank you. Thank you.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation with Carol Van Klompenberg, author of Tending Beauty, 40 Moments in My Gardens. It's some poetry, some narratives. Does it just pop out at you, oh, I'm a poem, that thought's a poem, or that's something I'm going to write a little story? Does it tell you that?
At some point in the process of writing, listening to the piece in the same way that I listen to my garden, at some point in the process, I think, oh, this is lyrical. This needs to be a poem. Or this is narrative. It needs to be a story. At some point in the process, I sense what form the piece wants to take.
Mm-hmm. It's like they're alive.
It is. Yep.
Now, think back at the beginning when you were a beginning gardener.
Mm-hmm.
What made you decide to put your hands into the earth, to grip a plant, to do whatever you do?
Okay. Well, the first time I tried gardening, my kids were little, and I tried vegetable gardening. And I was a terrible vegetable gardener. By July and August, when I was supposed to be harvesting, and it was hot, and there were mosquitoes, it became a weed patch. And then I would harvest, and then I had to put it up or preserve it or cook it or whatever. And after a few years, I gave up. So later, I wanted to start. There was a 3x9 rectangle in front of our porch, and we had pulled out some bushes. And I said to my husband, "I'd like to put some flowers there." And he said, "Carol, remember what happened to your vegetable garden?" And I said, "Well, I want to try." And so I did that 3x9 rectangle. And I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. And I didn't have to harvest it, and I didn't have to cook it. And the rest is history. I added bed after bed after bed, and I've kept up with them reasonably well. It's a different process, and it's a different reason. You know, it's not for food. It's for lots and lots of other reasons that I cover in the book. Interestingly, my husband is now the vegetable gardener, and he's a wonderful vegetable gardener.
I can just see him saying, "Remember your vegetable."
Oh, yes.
Okay. Now, where can people find your book?
I think what I'd like to do is have them go to your website, and my contact information will be there, and I'll be glad to respond and get a copy of the book to them.
Okay, great. We'll put that information.
Thank you.
on this. Do you have a piece you'd like to read?
Sure. I think I'll choose one that sort of took the form of a drama. It's called A Chipmunk Saga in Three Acts. And Act One is called Foiled Release. And it goes like this. He's my fourth catch of the season, this chipmunk. I load the live trap in the trunk, drive across three rivers, set the cage on the ground near river number three, and release him. I've released more than 40 chipmunks this way in recent years. I figure they can't possibly swim three rivers to get back home. Today, there's a pickup parked on the road near the river. A farmer surveys the levee that is keeping the flooded Skunk River from his cornfield. I park behind the pickup, walk down the driveway toward the flooded river, and open the cage. The chipmunk scurries into the weeds. Back in my car, I find a turning spot and head toward home. However, the farmer stands in the center of the road. He unfolds his arms and flags me down, his face stubbled and brown under his cap, his words clipped. He says, "I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't do that. The chipmunks eat my corn." "I just thought they went down by the river," I say nervously. "I had no idea." Silence falls. Finally, I continue, "Do you have a suggestion for something else I could do?" He doesn't blink. "Shoot him." Another silence, while I think, "I can't. I just can't. Chipmunks are cute little critters. I don't hate them. I only hate what they do to my garden." When I release chipmunks to the Skunk River, I picture them having a giant family reunion down by the riverside, welcoming new clan members as they arrive. I get rid of the chipmunks, and they get a family reunion. The farmer stands silent, courteous, but adamant. I picture his corn seeds disappearing from the field, the ones that have survived the flood. My release is probably legal, but I have no moral right to harm his crop. "It's not right that they eat your corn," I say. "I will figure out a plan B." As I head home, I have no idea what that plan might be. That's Act One. For Acts Two and Three, you'll need to check the book.
And I presume you take us to a very interesting conclusion.
Oh, yes. And it was a conclusion that surprised me when I got there.
Thanks to Carol Van Klompenberg for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.